Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 198, recorded on January 31st, 2014. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. I think I might be catching the California sickness that's going around, but maybe I'll beat it. We'll see.
Yeah, it's nasty.
Yeah. I wonder if getting the vaccination for it would help at this point. Probably not. I don't know how.
Probably.
I don't think that's how it works. But yeah, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer is also here. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Clearly, I'm doing better than you because I don't have any California disease.
That's good. But we haven't gotten rid of the possibility that you may have some other sort of disease.
No, we have not ruled out anything else.
Yeah. How's the weather out there? Is it super snowy?
It's definitely snowy. It's very cold out. Yeah. And it snowed overnight. It stopped for a little while, but it looks like it's snowing again.
Cool. Yeah, because everybody listens for the weather forecast in our various areas. But I was curious because you told me at some point that there is a real South Park in Colorado.
Yes.
And I might have typed it into Apple Maps, but I didn't find it.
Well,
is it a place you can actually find, or is it kind of, it lives in the hearts of every Coloradan?
No, you can find it, but it's a lot easier to find if you take someone with you that knows how to get there. So that would be me. But if you want to see the town that is loosely the inspiration for South Park,
okay,
look for Fairplay.
Fairplay.
Which is in the South Park basin,
okay,
along with South Park.
Okay. And I typed in Fairplay into Google Maps, and there's even a photo that says South Park. Welcome to South Park, Colorado.
Yeah.
How fun. All right. Well, with that, none of us went to the Mac 30th celebration thing. Although the Macworld All-Star Band did, and it looked like, based on their photos, that they had a really good time.
Yes.
There was a lot of cool stuff going on there. They had a lot of neat speakers, and I guess they had an original Mac there and whatnot. iFixit did a teardown of an original Mac, which...
I really enjoyed that. I thought
cool.
They did a great job of truly making it feel 80s.
Yeah. Where are you referring to the video?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something else. So it was pretty fun. I honestly, I would have been a little hesitant to do that if I was the guy doing that, taking apart something that is, pretty rare. Did they?
I don't think they're that rare, are they?
Are they?
A 128K Mac? I don't think they're that rare.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough.
I mean, you look at the sales reports, they say they didn't sell, that many, but I mean, we're talking about, I'd have to go look at the numbers, but I'm assuming it's more than tens of thousands, right?
I would assume so also.
Okay. Well, I do remember looking around on eBay at some point to find them, and I think I saw a few.
They might be a little pricey, but I mean, pricey
sure.
is relative, right? So are they... what, $500, $1,000, maybe in that range? I mean, iFixit tears down brand new. I mean, they tore down a brand new Mac Pro.
Right. That's true. Well, did they say if this Mac worked before they tore it down?
I don't think they did. But I mean,
no,
even if it was,
I don't remember them saying.
Even if it was working, now I'm curious on eBay what a working 128K Mac would go for. I wouldn't think that much, but maybe I'm going to be shocked and surprised.
I don't think it was a whole lot.
I don't think it would be that much either.
Yeah, here's one for $610. one at 900. I figured around $1,000 for a working one. Seems reasonable.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to keep one of those around the house. This one's 1,800.
But less than a Mac Pro, I guess is the point.
Which makes sense because it's not as powerful as a Mac Pro.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I think it's just a relative. They're not that rare. I mean, the rare ones are like the, you know, the prototypes or the early stuff.
Like the Twiggies.
Like one. Or like an original Apple One, of course, super expensive, but right. There weren't that many made. I mean, and there weren't that many that survived. But I think the 128K Mac, I mean, it sold pretty well.
Yeah.
I want to say in the tens of thousands, maybe even more. So there's a lot of them floating around out there if you come by them.
Fair enough. I didn't get a chance to go up to Cupertino either, but they had Apple celebrated themselves the 30th anniversary of the Mac. They had posters everywhere with the all of the Apple employees, past and present, which is very cool. I was kind of surprised that they acknowledged the anniversary at all, honestly.
Well, Steve Jobs isn't around.
Okay, so they're more open to sentimentalism.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think Tim Cook gets how important the Mac is, or how important the Mac legacy is. And so he's in a position where he can make something happen, and he did.
Yeah, they had
And it wasn't so much, well, although there was a lot of looking back, it wasn't so much about reminiscing on old times. It was more about, we've made this computer that has empowered people for 30 years.
Yeah.
Here's how some of these people have been able to accomplish whatever it is they do. Oh, and by the way, we have some kick-ass plans for the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked how they did it. But if Steve Jobs was alive, it wouldn't have happened.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess he wasn't one for doing that kind of thing.
Did they have perform One Republic? Is that right?
Yeah, they had One Republic, which is a band that I'm not familiar with at all. But they had a celebration. I guess they had a beer bash, right?
Oh, and we missed it.
Big old thing on the quad.
Yeah. I don't think we were invited.
And when has this ever stopped me before?
That's true. Yeah. Well, that's
I didn't know the original Macintosh beige color had a Pantone color. Pantone 453.
You're getting real deep on this right now, Adam.
I did not know that. As I hop into Google right now oh man, there it is. Apple beige, Pantone 453.
Apple beige, nice.
Man, I used to rattle off Pantone colors all the time instead of actually saying color names, and I never knew about Pantone beige 453.
Well, now you do.
Now I do.
Okay, so you know that sapphire glass plant in Arizona?
Yeah, it's opening up next month, right?
Yeah, that, at least it seems like they're, and by next month we mean tomorrow or the
tomorrow,
next.
Tomorrow, February.
Yeah, February.
I don't know if it's February 1st, though. I didn't.
Probably not.
Sometime in February.
It seemed like more mid-February, mm-hmm. But based on the Apple Daily, they say that Apple has been playing with, and I think this is slightly separate from that, but it's related because it has the sapphire glass. Foxconn has reportedly cranked out 100 prototype units with sapphire glass displays.
Yeah, so, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think so. Now, the only thing is, would it be for scratch proofing the devices, or would it be more for keeping them from shattering and breaking?
Well, I think glass is glass and it's gonna break.
Well, sure, but I mean, will it have more resistance to breaking, or is the idea with sapphire more of a resistance to scratching?
I thought sapphire was more brittle. So yeah. I would assume it's scratching and not breaking that it helps with.
Which is odd when you kind of think about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Why would you care so much about that then? If that is the case, one would think you want to avoid the shattering and breaking that is...
Yeah,
because it does happen. Yeah. And
the thing about Gorilla Glass is it's flexible, right?
Right.
So,
and I believe they've said that their most recent version of the Gorilla Glass outperforms Sapphire.
Well, and that's why I think some people are alluding the Sapphire maybe for a wearable product and not necessarily for a big. Or, you know, for a larger iPhone. But then you have, like you're saying, that this rumor that they've made prototype screens. But again, it could just be that. They're just testing the material to see how it performs. I don't know why you'd do 100,000. But
no, 100.
Or 100, sorry.
Just 100 units. But still, I mean, I guess you're trying to see if you can get the yields up and
yeah,
and all that kind of thing. But
that would imply that you're at a phase where you're thinking about this for production.
Yeah, in some way. And maybe they did it with iPhones. Maybe they did it with iPhone 5Ss just because that's what they had and they didn't want to tip their hat any further than just having the sapphire glass on the front kind of thing. But I would think that Apple would more want to worry about the displays breaking rather than scratching if sapphire is in fact more brittle. And honestly, with the glass, yes, you can get scratches on the displays of your iPhone, but I'm pretty convinced that it's not scratches on in the actual glass when that happens. I think that's a scratch in the oleophobic coating, because I occasionally will put like a chapstick in the same pocket with my iPhone, and the chapstick scratched the front of it. I mean, it's plastic.
Of the 5S?
The 5.
Yeah. My 5 had those kinds of scratches and stuff in it, interestingly enough, and knock on wood, but I think my 5S has not gotten a single scratch on it.
Hmm.
So, and I don't know, is that Gorilla Glass 3?
I do not know. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Mine doesn't have any scratches either. Okay,
five,
that's not
my
fair. Mine
did.
Didn't. And when I say didn't, it's because I had to take mine into the Genius Bar like a week ago because the proximity sensor was all jacked up and not working right.
Okay, so you got a new one. And it's...
And so they gave me a new iPhone. Gotcha. And there's no scratches on this one either. How about that?
Yeah.
But I mean, I've had mine since launch, and... no scratches. And I've made the same kind of mistake where I've had it in my pocket with even coins, I think, at one point by accident.
Yeah, I would never do that. That sounds... Well, that'll really screw up the metal around it and that sort of thing. And I guess I have some scratches on
that. I have it in an iPhone case, so the back and sides are fully protected, but...
Yeah, like you do. Did you guys see this about the Candy Crush thing? I didn't realize that they had filed for a trademark on the term candy in the UK, and I guess they were awarded that, and they're working on it in the US, which obviously seems pretty shady. So, and I guess it's the Candy Jam website, or just a bunch of developers are getting together to just make as many games and submit as many games as they can with the words candy or saga or scroll or apple, other words like that, in protest of them winning that trademark.
So I'm shaking my head as if this is a video show.
They're doing a deluge campaign.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's cool. Jeff, what do you think? You think it's stupid?
I'm all hung up on trying to trademark the term candy and then go after companies that were already using it.
Well, and Saga, they're gonna have a hard time when they run up against Mattel or Hasbro, whoever owns, or Parker Brothers, whoever owns the Candyland.
That's what I was just thinking.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, it's stupid. They shouldn't have been granted the trademark on the term candy. And they shouldn't be going after companies that were using the name. I can see going after companies that are creating names that are very, very similar to their product name and are also games. But
shouldn't necessarily, which came out first? Did Wreck-It Ralph come out first, or did the Candy Crush game come out before that? Anybody know?
I thought the Candy Crush game was made specifically because of Wreck-It Ralph.
Is it? Was it?
What's the significance? Because
I was going to say, if not, then they totally, there's something weird going on there. Because I think the name of the company is called King, and it's King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph.
Huh. I haven't seen that movie. So.
See, and I think people assume the two are related, but I don't know. Are they? Maybe I assumed that they weren't, but...
And I assumed that the Candy Crush game was made as a promotional thing for the movie. Just like you can play the Wreck-It Ralph game. And it was made only because of the movie.
Yeah, the game in the movie, I think, is called Sugar Rush.
Oh, that's right. Well, then maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, there's the weird thing, like King Candy, and then the Candy Crush is King Games. I mean, there's some serious stuff going on.
Huh. Is that movie good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The parts of it I saw, I liked.
Okay.
I kept falling asleep.
Oh.
But to be fair, I was really tired. And I was watching it in a hotel room.
Ah. Is this a Pixar film?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe I'll check it out. After I look at like Toy Story 3 and Brave and Monsters, Inc. and all those other ones I haven't seen. I think Cars just soured me.
I never saw Cars, and I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah, you shouldn't, because it just was dumb.
You didn't like Cars?
No, I didn't really like Cars.
No, what is wrong with you?
Well, this is the part of the show where where you guys ask me what's wrong with me and my tastes in movies that everybody else likes, I guess. Okay, so...
Cars is great, Jeff. Don't let him spoil you.
Okay, go watch Cars and then get upset that you watched Cars. It's not my fault.
What don't you like about it?
It was just boring. I liked WALL-E. That was a good movie.
WALL-E was a really good movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is kind of interesting. The Apple Store, the Apple Online Store, has been tweaked a little bit in the last week. And so before, they had several categories up along the top of the store. So Shop Mac, Shop iPad, iPhone, iPod. And now what they've done is essentially scooched all that stuff over to the left a little bit and added Shop Apple TV as the last item in the list. And this happened just after a few rumors about the Apple TV came around. And I think we talked about it last week about how we're expecting a new Apple TV before March with potentially game capabilities in it. And so now people are thinking, okay, this is Apple setting the scene for a new Apple TV. And I'm not sure if that really has as much relevance as everybody is placing on it, because honestly, it was kind of hard to find the Apple TV in the store to begin with. It might have just been a move to, I mean, there are a lot of people who use the Apple TV. There's more and more interest in Apple TV these days, and having a spot in the store where you can actually find the thing is pretty good, especially considering that when you go to apple.com, there's no button for Apple TV. You have to go, I think, into iPod, right? Yeah, you go into iPod, yes, and then you click on Apple TV.
Right.
So, and honestly, I think it would be better suited under iTunes. You know what I mean? Because it doesn't really link up with your iPod so much as it links up with iTunes. Although I guess
yeah, but iTunes is software and iPod is hardware.
Fair enough. So, what do you guys? What did you guys think about this when you saw that happen?
I think I went, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what it means is that Apple is slowly getting to the point where they're ready to make the Apple TV a bigger player in their whole game.
Yeah. Well, it certainly has been over the years. It certainly has increased in its relevance for Apple. So I think that's probably all it means, honestly. And in the past, when something like this happens, when there is a new device like this, they don't typically preset the stage. They just put it up there when it's a new thing. So I'm not sure. Maybe it was something like, you know, let's say there is a new thing coming out, a new Apple TV, and someone brought up during one of the meetings, like, hey, it's kind of hard for someone to find the Apple TV in the Apple store. Oh, okay. Well, have Joe change the banner at the top and add Apple TV to the top, because it's just been on their radar a little bit more.
So you're not buying the game thing?
No, I'm hoping for the game thing. That's why I haven't bought a new Apple TV yet. I sold mine on eBay, actually. But no, I think they're going to do something new. I don't know if it's going to be a situation where you can't, where there's going to be a separate controller for it. Maybe there will be a separate controller for it, but also the ability to use your iOS devices for this. I don't know. I would like a newer Apple TV, though. That's why I'm holding off for a little bit, at least. I may be holding off for quite some time. We'll see how long I can last. But for what it's worth, I said last show that you should put your Apple TV 2 up on eBay if you have one. And I think I got $230.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I paid $100 for it when I got it. And it's like an original Apple TV 2. So I got it back when they first came out. So, yeah, do that if you don't care about the jailbreaking. What else do we have here to talk about? Apple had their Q1 earnings call. Tim Cook had a few interesting little tidbits to say, such as mobile payments were one of the thoughts behind Touch ID. And, of course, it is right now as the iPhone 5S stands, because you can make your App Store payments with the Touch ID, right? But it's limited to that at this point, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. He went on to say that people love doing it that way, and they're not planning to limit Touch ID to the digital purchases, but they didn't, of course, have any specific things to announce that day.
So. And it doesn't surprise me that they said that.
Yeah.
Because there's no way they were looking at Touch ID as something as limited as it is right now.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to Touch ID when I get it on my phone, because it just seems like, I mean, just eliminating the fact that you have to type in your password to download apps. And I've taken my passcode off my phone. I had it on there for quite some time, but again, it's inconvenient for me to type in any sort of meaningful password. So I do it without. And I think that's, of course, that's the reason why one of the reasons why they implemented Touch ID is to streamline that process, so people don't go without passcodes.
Maybe. Or it may be that they put it on because they were planning on eventually releasing their own digital wallet, digital payment sort of system, and they wanted to use fingerprints as the authentication for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they... what do you think the likelihood is that Apple is actually going to go forward with that?
I think it's pretty strong.
Yeah.
And I think the limited use we have with Touch ID today is only because Apple wanted to really field test the technology before jumping all the way into the whole mobile payment market. So we all paid for brand new iPhones to beta test hardware for Apple.
Now, do you think this is going to be done through NFC or low power Bluetooth?
No.
No?
It'll be it won't be NFC. I would be stunned to see Apple add NFC to
it'll just be devices. iOS.
How would that go down? Like, you're going into a coffee shop and you want to make your payment.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, register will probably do low power Bluetooth to send a signal to the phone, and then you'll just say, hey, do you authorize this payment? Hit your Touch ID and you're done. And then it cashes out through your iTunes account.
There you go.
Okay, that works.
I think Apple will do, you know, they'll sign up retailers who want to participate in the system, and they'll take a little cut of the transaction, you know, the transaction fee. But I never bring out a credit card. I never do anything, right? There's just something, iBeacon or whatever in the register that just says, okay, here's the payment amount. Sends a message to my iPhone. Little message pops up. Hey, do you want to authorize this? Starbucks wants to charge you $3.95.
Yeah.
And you're done.
And there you go. And you're done.
I wonder how they'll deal with the fact that, you know, maybe there are five people in the line and you're the person at the front making your payment.
Either that or it'll be the whole scanner thing like they have now. I just sort of whipped that off the top of my head. But, I mean, it could just be, you know, the barcode scan thing, almost like the prepaid card works now at Starbucks.
Yeah, and I guess that is a way to go. And I guess there's less that you need to make the retailers do in terms of new equipment, but more and more of those scanners can scan screens.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not as elegant as I would expect Apple to implement.
Well, I don't know about Starbucks kinds of payments. I think they're going to continue for those sorts of micropayments or those sorts of transactions where you're talking about buying food or those sorts of things. I think they just stick with what they have now, which is the whole passbook, you know, gift card sort of thing. And maybe they create a universal Apple one that you can use at those kinds of retailers. And it's just the bar scan thing, which seems to work fine.
I think for using a bar scan more universally like that, they'd have to come up with a system where the barcode is generated dynamically for each transaction. Otherwise, sure. You could do like if I wanted someone else to use my Starbucks card all the time.
You just take a picture
with your iPhone.
Of it.
Yeah, I'll just take a screenshot of the barcode,
yep.
Give it to them, and
right.
Then...
Yeah. Right. Well, however that system works. But, I mean, the point is I don't know that that's what this payment system is. The payment system that I think is being rumored about, that everybody's talking about, is in essence just Apple rolling out their Easy Pay retail store system to other people that aren't Apple. Meaning that, you know, I walk into whatever retailer and I have my phone, and as I pick stuff up, I just scan the barcode on it, goes into my app, and then when I'm got everything in my cart or in my shopping bag or whatever, I press to pay, and, you know, I walk by somebody at the front of the store. It's basically, imagine taking the self-checkout experience that a lot of retailers have and making that not that you have to go to the kiosk at the end of the thing. As a matter of fact, Costco, I don't know how widely they're rolling it out, but one of my Costcos here in the area has a system now where you take your Costco card and they have this huge bank of just like handheld scanners. And you scan your card and then it issues you a scanner. And then as you walk around, as you're putting stuff in your cart, you barcode scan it. And then when you get up to the front, you just basically show them, hey, here's the, you know, I've scanned everything. You slide your card through the little handheld scanner, it pays, and then you walk out. So it's like everything's already scanned in by the time you get to checkout. So really the checkout process is just, oh, did you pay for this stuff? Yes, I did. And then you walk out.
That's interesting.
So
I like
you
that
could walk
idea.
Around the store, scan everything with your phone, right? And then there's probably pay, and then the little receipt on the phone. You just walk and show the guy at the door, hey, here's what I paid for. He looks in your cart, goes, oh, yeah, that's your stuff, and you walk out.
Interesting.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, it ostensibly removes the congestion at the checkout.
Well, and you never hand your credit card to someone, sure. So you don't have to worry about the whole skimming thing. You know, there's lots of advantages. I don't think retailers or hopefully retailers would be willing to go as far as Apple does, but I think a lot of retailers are still leery of that. But I mean, Apple's has the best experience, right? I walk into the store, I open my app, I scan my thing, and I walk out. You don't even have to show anything to anybody. Nobody stops me. No one bothers me.
Yeah, you got to think that there's some kind of system going on there that monitors that happening, though.
I think the system is that most people are inherently honest.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah,
I guess that would explain why when I walked out of an Apple store once with something in my hand that I just kind of forgot was in my hand, that nobody stopped me, and then I got, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm like, why do I have this still? And I walked back and I'm like, hey, I totally walked out with this. I don't know why, but here you go.
Well, and I'm sure, I mean, talk about an experiment. I'm sure Apple has data now. If they are planning to roll out a payment system like emulating like what they've been doing in the Apple Store, they have hard data now on very expensive, you know, high ticket items on what their percentage loss is of stuff that walked out of the store and wasn't paid for, right? So they can probably prove, hey, look, you know, using this system is no less risky than what you're doing now in terms of shoplifting.
Sure.
And I bet you the numbers play that out.
I bet you're right.
Yeah.
The biggest shoplifting issue in retail is not from customers or just people coming in off the street to steal stuff. It's internal. And I'm assuming that doesn't change with this, because the honest people, you give them the opportunity to be honest and they're more likely to do so. And the people that are going to steal are going to steal regardless. And for the most part, they work for the companies that they steal from.
Yeah. So it may be that they have hard data. So as they're trying to sell this thing and shop it around, they go, look, you know, we've got accessories that are, you know, hundreds of dollars, and we're not seeing any more losses after implementing this system than we were, you know, prior to implementing it.
Yeah.
And it's a better consumer experience. And oh, by the way, our consumers love it. And everybody I've talked to who's used the Easy Pay in an Apple store, I absolutely love it. I went and bought my Nest smoke detector there, my Nest Protect there, simply because I knew I could just walk in, grab the thing, scan it, and walk out. You know, it was in and out in 5 minutes. I didn't, you know, I could have gone to like Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever, but it would have been more of a hassle.
Yep. The Easy Pay totally rocks. There are times when I will pay a little bit more for a product, like for a cable, simply because I can walk into an Apple store, scan it, walk out, I'm done. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's magical.
So, and I think you'll sell more stuff. I mean, it's the same reason why I think Amazon Prime is causing Amazon's stuff to go up. Prime is not cheaper, you know, necessarily. I think they pad a little bit. It tends to be stuff that's on Amazon Prime is a little more expensive than you might be able to get it to retail. But I go there and I'm willing to pay just a little bit more, because guess what? I go in, I put it in my cart, I check out. Next day I have it at my house for free shipping.
Yeah.
And I buy more and more stuff on Amazon now because of it. You know, it's changed my thinking about, oh, hey, maybe I can get that on Amazon.
Which is exactly what Amazon wants.
Right. And so I think this kind of system for retailers can do that too. People want, you know, a good experience and convenience, and this is what Apple can deliver and what a lot of other retailers and people don't realize or think about, unfortunately. So hopefully it'll spread. But I still maintain, I mean, I've maintained since the beginning that their whole payment system is not NFC. It's not anything other than the two pieces are, one, I only have to give my credit card and information to Apple, who I already trust with that information. And two, it's replicating the Easy Pay experience. And so they can have an app API for that. So retailers can build it into their app. And then you couple that with iBeacons, right? So now they've got iBeacons in their app. I've got their payment in their app. So guess what? I want to have their app, that retail store's app, because I want to use the payment piece. But now as I'm walking around the store, they can push me offers and coupons and, you know, all that sort of stuff too.
Now, what, can you imagine if it gets to the point where we have all these connected appliances, like we'll say a refrigerator, and so you're running low on whatever in the refrigerator, you're walking around the grocery store and you go down an aisle and iBeacons on the aisle sends you an alert and says you're almost out of flour, you should pick up a bag.
That would be really cool.
Would be awesome. I mean, it sounds some people might think, oh, that's kind of creepy or invasive or something like that, but it's like a lot of those kinds of technologies, the convenience of that, because how many times have you had the experience where you've just gone to the grocery store, you get home, and it's like, oh, I should have bought milk.
Yeah.
Right? Because you just forgot that you needed it, but you forgot.
Yeah, for me, it's usually that I've already put it down on a list, and I should have just looked at the list when I was at the store.
Yeah, but now imagine if your phone's like, hey, dummy, you're by the milk. You need milk.
Yeah. My phone would end up calling me dummy a lot, but it would help my life.
It would help your life.
It would definitely help. I would actually shop at a grocery store that offered that service.
Yeah.
Unless it's Safeway.
Yeah, and now imagine that as you're doing that, so you grab the milk off the shelf, you scan it as you're going into putting it in your cart, and then you just walk out of the grocery store. You don't talk to a person. You don't wait in a line.
It's almost like Amazon without having to sit in front of your computer.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, with groceries, with exercise.
The one dilemma they're going to have is obviously alcohol and those sorts of cigarettes and those sorts of things. But they'll have to deal with that sort of thing and drugs.
Yeah, that's true. But they'll sort that out.
They'll sort it out.
Yeah, just details. So what do you guys think about Google selling Motorola Mobility to Lenovo?
What a wasted opportunity.
And all the money they lost on that.
Well,
they didn't lose as much as... Yeah. Because they sold off a lot early on. And then...
After buying it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because to be able to get what they wanted, which is the patents.
Yeah, sure. They just wanted the patents.
They had to take a lot of other stuff. And
even though they said they didn't.
Yeah. And so they sold off all the stuff they don't want. And now they really have sold off all the stuff they didn't want. And then part of the deal was like stock transaction sort of stuff. So the amount that they lost probably isn't as high as most people think, but I'm sure they still did lose money.
You know, it is weird, though, because they seemed to have acted in a way where they did want the Motorola cell phone business, right?
Yeah,
Didn't they build the whole Moto X customized factory?
Yeah,
and
there's
all that
the
stuff.
Moto X and the Moto G, which are both
That had to good not phones. Be cheap, right?
So maybe they thought at first that they could play both sides of the game, and they have realized that from a political standpoint, meaning playing politics with other companies,
mm-hmm.
that having their own hardware service or system wasn't such a good idea, because now all these other partners
mm-hmm.
don't have as much incentive to continue using Android.
You think because some of them are jumping to Windows Mobile or something like that?
That wouldn't surprise me.
Huh? Yeah, I didn't even think about it that way. It just seemed to me like they didn't give the hardware business much of a chance. It's like they went gung-ho for 3 months, and they're like, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
Which is just bizarre. It's bizarre behavior, no matter how you look at it. But, yeah, I mean, so then you fall back on, well, they never really wanted the mobile hardware business. They just wanted the patents, which, again, they said, oh, we're not buying it just for the patents, or sort of alluded that wasn't what they were doing. But now it seems obvious that probably was exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it makes you think that the doing all the hardware stuff was just sort of putting on a face to show, you know, so nobody would call into question.
Well, I wonder
if they can kind of point out and go, well, we tried, but, you know, they didn't sell that well. It didn't, you know, so we're going to let it go. Yeah, maybe,
but man, that's a lot to invest in creating that facade.
I know, exactly. That's why I'm baffled by the whole thing.
I don't think it was... I think they earnestly were trying to see if that would work. I don't think they were just doing it as a facade.
But I mean, did they give it a year? How long did they have that business? A year and a half? I mean,
a year and a half. They didn't have it long enough to see if it was going to work or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it might have been an upper level decision to just get rid of it. Maybe they just didn't care at some point.
And it's not like the Lenovo offer is a windfall. I mean, it's actually pretty low based on what they, you know, paid originally. So
Right.
Lenovo's getting it on fire sale.
Yeah. So good for Lenovo.
Well, and then the big irony, right, is now Motorola is a Chinese company, right? Is it Chinese or Taiwanese? Where is Lenovo?
I thought it was Chinese.
Yeah. Another great American company.
Yep.
All right. So let me see. What else do we have? Anything more to talk about? I mean, Nintendo isn't going to make any games for iOS.
What about? Here's a story. So apparently, Apple stores will recognize if you have BO.
Oh yeah, you're going to say that.
Oh yeah.
And kick in the ventilation system higher.
No.
So that the store is not smelly.
Is this true?
it's called the ice stink system.
Well, they must have heard my girlfriend talking about how she thinks every Apple store smells like puke.
Yeah, all the nerds bringing in their unwashed masses to the store, making it stink.
Yeah.
Okay, so where was this story? I gotta check this out.
This is on Apple Insider, but it came via Rocco. I can never remember the guy's. How do you say his last name, Jeff? Rocco over at Rocco Pendola.
Over at the street.
Yeah, apparently this started with the store in Santa Monica, and that they would say in the mornings the store would kind of reek of body odor. Early in the morning. And apparently that some of the stores have more of a problem because the sniffer sensors are just too high up and they're not picking up the gas.
Wow.
The odors, but it's supposed to kick in the ventilation system. And apparently this is just something that a lot of retail stores actually have. And it's mainly for detecting things like carbon monoxide and, you know, it's for controls of the ventilation system, but it's kind of funny. That it will look for foul-smelling chemicals and volatile organic compounds and then crank up the ventilation to kind of air things out.
Also known as farts.
So maybe the Apple stores your girlfriend is going into is just they have malfunctioning systems.
Maybe. Maybe it's just that she hates the Apple store because I make her go there. I don't make her. I tell her she doesn't have to come with because I don't want her to hate it, but she does. But I don't hate the Apple store.
That's so sweet of her to come along.
Yeah, well, you should check out the pictures that when we went to Washington, D.C., I took her with me to see the space shuttle Discovery, and those pictures look a lot like she's having fun with space shuttle Discovery. I told her, get in front of the space shuttle and smile and pretend like you are enjoying yourself right now. And she's very convincing because I know she hated it. So yeah, maybe she'll just have to pretend.
That's what I have. We had to talk about that. Picks.
Yeah, picks. Adam, you go first.
All right, I'm going to pick this cool app that came up this morning. So if you've ever watched South Park... Right.
I don't know about the show you speak.
And they do they do those scenes where they'll use like real people's faces, and then they sort of make the mouth into like a little puppet thing, but it's just like the chin and the whole mouth jaw kind of goes up and down.
Uh-huh.
Right. Well, this is actually an app. It's actually for kids, but it does that sort of effect to your photos, and it's called Yakit Kids. And what it lets you do is take a photo and then animate the mouth. And then as you talk, you start recording a video. And as you talk, the mouth will move in sync with automatically in sync with whatever you're saying. Oh. So it uses the microphone. And then there's all kinds of props and little cartoon eyeballs and mouths and effects and things like that that you can layer on top of this. And so you can create a bunch of different, you know, kind of like video puppets and then animate them in this app. And create funny little animations, and then you can save them off and share them and all that sort of fun stuff. And they do have some like built-in characters and things like that. I'm assuming at some point they're going to plan on expanding it. But right now it's free and it's targeted at kids. And what's great is there's no in-app purchase. There's no extra stuff at this point. I don't know if it'll stay that way because I don't know how they're going to make money off this, but for now, it's just a fun little thing you can play around with, and it's totally free. And no adware, no in-app purchase, so none of that annoying stuff. So it's just kind of awesome.
How do you pronounce that? Or how do you spell that? Is it like a...
Y-A-K-I-T, Yakit.
Like a yak.
Yeah, like a yak. As a matter of fact, they have a yak right in the start screen. Okay. Yakit Kids.
Huh.
Bring your photos to life.
And it's free. $0.
And it's hilarious.
Cool.
Okay. And I'm sure it's fun for adults too.
I'm sure.
They do have now there are like some of the predefined characters are a little less kid friendly, which gave me a little bit of a pause. So like when you grab some of the existing characters, there are there's President Obama, random, a piece of talking bacon, devil, a bunch of zombies, a talking piece of poo.
Which, naturally.
A Hershey's Kiss, a penguin. It looks like a potato.
What's the difference between a Hershey's Kiss and a talking pile of poo?
They look very similar, as a matter of fact, except one is wrapped in...
And
maybe this other one is supposed to be a Hershey's Kiss unwrapped, but to me it looks like a piece of poo.
It's probably a piece of poo.
The Hershey's Kiss is wrapped in foil. But then you have props. Of course, there's poo and puke and clouds and
good
glasses and all kinds of stuff. So it's fun. It's fun and it's free.
All right. Well, there you go. Yakit Kids. It's free. So, Jeff, what do you have?
What do I have? Okay, here it is. It's called Swift Key Note. It's brand new. And it's a little note-taking app for the iPhone and iPad that uses predictive typing, but it learns the words that you use. And so as you're typing, it displays what it thinks the word is that you want to complete, and it'll give you three choices. And so you tap the word you want, and the more you write, the more it learns about your typing. And Android users will recognize this right away because this is something that they've been able to get for a long time.
So this is like the swipe thing.
It's sort of like the swipe thing. But when you're typing words, you're not actually sliding your fingers around the keys like you do with swipe.
Okay.
And it offers predictive typing that many people feel is superior to the predictive typing that is built into iOS. And so it's been bundled up into this note-taking app, and it also ties directly into Evernote. So if you're typing notes in this, they will appear in Evernote, and it has all of your Evernote notes as well. So it's a cool little app, and it's a great example of what you can do with alternative keyboard systems. And even better, it's free.
Cool. So it's It looks interesting. Well, the only thing that I've... The only issue I have with these sorts of apps is that, yes, you can use this fancy new way of using your keyboard.
But you can only use it in, like, one app.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but apparently they have some system so that you can link other apps to it because you can use it with Evernote.
Hmm.
So that tells me that at some point we could see other apps tying into their system. And so that would be kind of cool.
Kind of text expander style.
Sure. Yeah. And until then, it's a great little tool to use as a note-taking app. And it also gives you some experience playing around with different ways of predicting what you're going to type and not being limited to just what Apple offers.
Gotcha. Cool. And look at that. As soon as that, as I'm browsing around the internet, I'm browsing around for these app picks. And as soon as I said text expander, now I'm looking at a Google ad for text expander.
Mm-hmm.
Google's good.
Maybe I should remove the microphone from my computer. Oh, wait, then we couldn't do this show.
You didn't, if you've ever been to the Smile website, you'll get served up that ad.
I go to that website maybe every week.
Yeah.
So I guess that explains it. So
it's not your microphone.
Okay, good. So my pick this week is one that I've been using very frequently lately, but it's eBay, the eBay app for both my iPhone and my iPad. Of course, it's a free app because it goes along with the site, but man, this thing is so useful. And I think that back when it was first released, it didn't have as many filters and whatnot. And, I use the eBay app for iPad, to search for stuff. It has a lot of really great ways to filter down to exactly what you want. And of course, now, if you don't know, if you haven't used eBay in a long time, you, can have saved searches. So if you're looking for something, that's more of a commodity sort of thing, there's a lot of them on there, and you want to get it for the right price, you can set up these safe searches and it can notify you, or you can just use that over and over. And so I use my iPad for browsing for things, but when I'm actually bidding on something or planning on bidding on something or selling something even on eBay, the app on my phone is really good because it sends me very quick up to the minute, up to the second notifications, especially for things that I'm bidding on. Like yesterday I was bidding on something that I wanted to do a snipe bid. So it notifies you for anything that you're watching. It notifies you 5 minutes before it ends. And of course in intervals with I think 24 hours and 12 hours too. And then it actually gives you a countdown on the item as it goes, and you can bid on it. It's very fast and very useful for anything that you want to do on eBay. Yeah, and I've been doing a lot of stuff on there. All right, lately.
The proof is in the pudding. Then did the snipe bid? Did you win?
Yep.
Well, there you go.
I won, and I don't use it to list items. And I don't know, maybe that's just out of habit. I like to be super tweaky about everything that I list on eBay because I like to find, if I'm selling my Apple TV, let's say, I like to go out and look for what the average price of the Apple TV is that's being sold. And then I try to find the ones that had the best success and I just sort of copy their ad verbatim. And it seems to work.
Perfect.
But... yeah, I use it for...
So you plagiarize other people's eBay listings.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's a really big, giant, bold-faced, all-caps text that says, Apple TV 2, jailbroken. And for whatever reason, that sells really well. So, yeah, I plagiarize that. But, yeah, either way, the eBay app, if you use eBay at all, it rocks. So check it out if you haven't already, because it's way better than cruising around the website, I've found. So especially on your iPhone, but even on your iPad as well. So that's my pick. It's the eBay app. There are two different ones for the iPhone and the iPad, so just get the one that you want. And with that, you can find our iPhone picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Review the show on iTunes, tell a friend, that helps. And you can send your questions, comments, and feedback, audio or text, to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media. Backbeatmedia.com is where you can find them. And Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer. That's macobserver.com, at jgamet on Twitter. And zazzle.com/jgamet is where you can find his drawings, his illustrations on all sorts of things, including underwear and mugs and shirts. And the We Have Communicators mug is there as well.
And I just realized my pick this week should have been Pantone 453. What was I thinking?
What are you going to do with that, though? I guess you're going to...
You print something.
Okay, fair enough. Print something in that.
I'm going to paint my house that color.
453?
Yep.
Okay.
The trim you need to do in the Pantone for the keyboard keys.
Oh.
That darker brown color?
Yeah.
I think that the darker brown that the typeface was in, or was behind the app, was it kind of like behind the Apple logo that we're talking about? Yeah, that sort of chocolate.
Yes.
I've been needing to paint my house. I might run it by my wife and see what happens.
Don't tell her that it's because it's the color of the Mac, though.
I'm going to have a house colored like the classic Mac.
Don't tell her that, because she'll say no. That's ridiculous.
Just tell her it's a classic color.
It's a classic color I found. My friend Jeff is a connoisseur of Pantone colors, and he suggested that I use Pantone 453 to trim my house. What do you
think? Do we know what Pantone color the darker brown is? Now I gotta search for that.
Oh boy, I'm sure it exists. I don't know what I was thinking when I didn't think that they very carefully selected the color of that. But of course they did.
Yeah.
Oh boy. You can probably find a list of that stuff. Adam Christensen's at the Maccast, maccast.com, at Maccast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is the member version of the show.
Yeah, I did a little history with the Mac on the last episode. So
yeah, what was your first Mac?
All the different Mac models that I had.
What was your first one?
The Mac Plus.
And when did that come out in the
85, maybe 86.
So that's basically the Mac 128, but more RAM.
It has a lot more RAM. It came with 1 megabyte, I think.
Ooh,
standard.
A whole megabyte.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rocking machine.
Macintosh Plus. Okay, so that's the fourth Mac that came out. So there was the Mac 128, the Mac 512, the Mac XL, and then the
Mac Plus. Well, the Mac XL was a bastardized Lisa.
Oh, right. Yeah. The Mac XL. It looks like that.
It was like the Lisa with the Mac OS on it. It was like them trying to clear out all the leases that they didn't sell. Seriously,
because the landfill was too full.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. The Macintosh XL was a modified version of the Apple Lisa. Computer shipped with MacWorks, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool.
So I kind of don't count that one. I mean, it went 128, 512, and then the Mac Plus in the classic Mac form factor.
Did that have a color screen?
No. The first Mac with a color screen, I think, was an SE 30?
I believe.
Or was it the SE?
SE. Well, the SE 30 had an external display, as I recall.
It doesn't look like it. I'm looking at pictures right now.
Didn't it? No, I'm thinking of the Mac 2.
Mac 2 CX. Yeah, the Mac 2 had an external display. So the Mac 2. It looks like the Mac 2 might have had a color display.
Well, the Mac.
I'm firing up Mac Tracker right now.
Me too. I'm already in there.
No, yeah. No, I've got to look. Okay.
First so Mac with color capabilities of Mac 2.
Mac 2.
Yep.
But that was an external display. So the first, again, the Mac with that. Well, it was the color classic then.
Okay.
Had to be the one that was with that kind of form factor. Is that right? Hold on, let me see. No, the color classic doesn't count.
Oh, boy.
Well, the color classic, what they did was they went back to the form factor with a color display.
Okay. So are we done here?
Now I'm really curious. So the SE still had a black and white screen. And the SE30 still had a black and white screen.
Well, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter while they keep looking for things. And you can also find Appler, getappler.com, getappler.com. It's the social network for apps. Find out the apps that we're using. Let everybody else know the apps that you're using. It's fun. Getappler is the Twitter for that. That I guess I don't know why I give that out, because I don't really Twitter from that very often unless there's something crazy happening. But you can follow that anyway.
So people know when the crazy thing happens.
Yeah, follow that then. And that is anything else you want to say, Adam, about the Color Max?
No. See, the SE30 was a 2X inside an SE case. I just can't remember if the display was color or not, but I think it did color because it was essentially a Mac 2.
My first Mac was an iMac G3. It's an Indigo iMac G3. Yeah. I got it in 2005. It was obviously pretty old, but I still have it.
Wow. My first Mac was a 512K, but it wasn't actually mine, so it was the first one I used.
Ah.
The first one that I actually owned myself was a Quadra 610 DOS compatible.
That sounds like a beast.
It was one of the Pizza Box Macs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see that. Cool. All right. Well, I guess then before we get out of here, MacTracker.com, right? Yeah, MacTracker.ca. Go get MacTracker and have fun with
awesome.
That. So, and there's a MacTracker app for your iPhone as well. So with that, we'll talk to you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. No. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers.